Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1028, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on October 16th of the year 2018. I had been wanted to do a program or two about some of the psychological warfare aspects of the hashtag MeToo movement and the Women's March, both of which I believe to be part of a very sophisticated psyop. And to do that properly, I would probably have to do almost an entire program about some of the social psychology and even Freudian psychology that I believe underlies that. There just isn't time. There is so much going on that I'm going to put that on the back burner, and frankly, I don't know if I'll ever get around to finishing that dish and serving it up properly, because it would take two programs to do even begin to do justice, and would involve some pretty heavy sociological and psychological analysis, and I've just too much else going on, too many other things going on. We're going to talk about some of that. I concluded For the Record 1027, in which I talked about Brett Kavanaugh and how the focus and fear on both sides of Kavanaugh's nomination about his drinking and sexual habits and the Dr. Christine Ford, Blasey Ford, imbroglio, and I believe she is telling the truth. She was getting psychiatric counseling in part because of that. However, and although, as I said, I don't hold a brief for what I believe Kavanaugh did to Dr. Ford, he also was apparently drunk from reading the history. I suspect Kavanaugh is alcoholic and certainly was drinking when he was young. I don't know if he still drinks, but he appears to be alcoholic, which, while it does not excuse what he did, it does place that in a larger psychopathological context. However, I noted in that program that compared to what Brett Kavanaugh can be very credibly documented as doing for George Bush, and he was at the very core of George W. Bush's administration, was pivotal to what that administration did, and given the hundreds of thousands, or perhaps counting in the deliberately engineered economic collapse of 2008, the millions of human lives that were destroyed by what George W. Bush did, what Kavanaugh appears to have done to Dr. Ford pales by comparison. And beyond that, I concluded the program reading some excerpts of the long-disappeared Who Killed Polly by Frank Spearing, talking about a sexual slave trafficking program involving 12- and 13-year-old American girls who then wind up as slave prostitutes in brothels in Saudi Arabia. Eventually, they are turned out to die. And I mentioned it because that would mention of that, just mentioning it, let alone doing anything about it, would cut across the Saudi-American power axis, which is inviolable. We could not expect anyone to do anything about it, or beyond Frank Spearing and a few tiny little people like yours. Truly, no one is even really going to talk about it. Against that background of the inviolability of the Saudi-American power axis, I was initially amazed at the brouhaha about the apparent murder of Jamal Khashoggi, a Saudi journalist and critic of the current Saudi monarchy. I wondered, given his last name, and it is the same as the famous arms dealer Adnan Khashoggi, deeply involved with the Iran-Contra affair, BCCI, involved with the financing of Al-Qaeda, also a major financier of the, quote, truther, unquote, movement to control demolition stuff. I wondered if Jamal Khashoggi was related to Adnan Khashoggi. It seemed unlikely that we would have two different Khashoggi families. And indeed, he was his nephew, Adnan Khashoggi's nephew. Adnan Khashoggi was deeply involved with many of the people involved with one aspect or another of the September 11th attacks and evidentiary tributaries running between those attacks and other things, particularly drug smuggling. Daniel Hopsicker has written extensively about that. Donald Trump bought Adnan Khashoggi's old yacht. It turns out that not only was Jamal Khashoggi the nephew of Adnan Khashoggi, but he had a whole lot of other connections as well. And again, I was wondering, why, when you get the New York Times and the Washington Post and the major networks all, you know, beating their breasts and rending their hair, oh my goodness, you know, what happened to poor Jamal Khashoggi? Saudis have been doing all kinds of horrendous things for a long time, from relatively small but outlandish things, like a prominent Saudi cleric a few years back issued a fatwa against chess, again, the board game, the ancient board game chess, in, I think it was 1979. A Saudi princess was beheaded for having an extramarital affair, and that was actively suppressed by our media and by Western media in general. I would know though the hashtag MeToo movement wasn't around, and the women's movement remained dutifully silent about that as well. So why the flap about Jamal Khashoggi? Who was he? What were his connections? And why is this all of a sudden a major cause célèbre? Well, it turns out, not surprisingly, that Jamal Khashoggi, the apparently late and reputedly now dismembered Jamal Khashoggi, had more connections than a switchboard. None of them were any damn good, despite the hagiography to which we have been subjected. And his links include Mr. Erdogan of Turkey himself, Muslim Brotherhood, and a man who has implemented a combination of Islamic and secular pan-Turkish fascism in Turkey. The Muslim Brotherhood, Jamal Khashoggi was deeply involved with and a major advocate for the Muslim Brotherhood. Jamal Khashoggi was very close to a guy named Khaled, K-H-L-A-L-E-D, Safuri, S-A-F-F-U-R-I. Khaled Safuri was the co-founder of Grover Norquist and Karl Rove's Islamic Free Market Institute. That is the organization that I spoke about at great length in, among other programs, For the Record 356, 357, came back to it in 1006, and I touched on it in connection with Brett Kavanaugh as well in our last program. And Khaled Safuri was the co-founder of the Islamic Free Market Institute. And the ideology of and the ghost of Ibn Khaldun, the Muslim Brotherhood's primary economic guru, and his advocacy of neoliberal or corporatist economics, which has made the Muslim Brotherhood beloved to the West, to the transnational corporations and their spear carriers in the Western political elites. And in addition to that, Muslim Brotherhood has proved very useful as the generator of proxy warriors against, of course, the Afghan Mujahideen were a knockoff of the Muslim Brotherhood. They morphed into Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was very useful in the Balkans after the fall of the Soviet Union. They helped to dissolve Yugoslavia, and they have been very active in the Caucasus against Russia as well. Adnan Khashoggi was really tight with Osama bin Laden and mourned Osama bin Laden's death. Jamal Khashoggi, I think I said Adnan. Jamal Khashoggi was a prophylactic of the First Order. He was a monster. However, he was an advocate of the monstrosity that the Western corporatists just loved. And again, a man with more connections than a switchboard. I think in connection with Jamal Khashoggi, we are looking at a perpetuation of the, quote, Arab Spring, unquote, which was one of the color revolutions, and as we looked at in 1026, as well as 733 through 739, it was basically a Western intelligence, quote, op, a U.S. intelligence op. The idea was to oust some of the autocrats and some of the petro-feudal monarchies of the Persian Gulf and to bring a corporatist neoliberal economic agenda to those countries courtesy of the Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization, again, that was allied with the Axis in World War II, and that was then incorporated into various, incorporated really does, that is a useful word, into elements of Western intelligence, including the CIA, to be used as not only anti-communists, but anti-labor activists in the Arab and Muslim world. We'll illuminate a little more about this in a minute, but of the martyred Jamal Khashoggi, again, I was wondering, why in bloody hell, you know, Saudi Arabia was deeply involved in the September 11th attacks during the Iran-Contra scandal. Younger, older listeners may remember that it was credibly established that the Saudis had channeled monies to Republican congressional candidates in violation of U.S. election law. They can do just about anything. A Saudi princess was beheaded for having an extramarital affair. No one raised a finger about that, including the women's movement. And why all of the, oh my goodness, Jamal Khashoggi was killed. Oh my goodness, you know, what happened? Again, I say, why now? Who was this guy? Was he connected to Adnan Khashoggi? He sure as bloody hell was, and he was connected to a whole lot of things as well.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
From the AP, the Associated Press, of October 12th of 2018, article by Sarah L., capital E-L, capital D-double-E-B, Sarah L. Deeb, missing Saudi writer had big plans for his troubled region, unquote, skipping down. Part of Khashoggi's approach was to include political Islamists in what he saw as democracy building. That, along with his sharp criticisms of the kingdom's crackdown on its critics, its war in Yemen, and its policy on Iran, put him at odds with the rulers of Saudi Arabia, which deeply opposes Islamists like the Muslim Brotherhood, seeing them as a threat. Skipping down. More about Khashoggi's advocacy of and alliance with the Muslim Brotherhood. Khashoggi had incorporated his democracy advocacy group, DAWN, capital D, capital A, capital W, capital N, in January in Delaware, said Khaled, K-H-A-L-E-D, Safuri, S-A-F-F-U-R-I, another friend. The group was still in its planning stages, and Khashoggi was working on it quietly, likely concerned it could cause trouble for associates, including activists in the Gulf, Safuri said. Khaled Safuri, his friend and political ally who helped with the establishment of that DAWN group, was the co-founder of Grover Norquist's Islamic free market institute. Carl Rove was deeply involved with that. It was the managing director of that institution who interceded with then Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill on April 4th of 2002 on behalf of the individuals and institutions who had been busted by the FBI and the Secret Service, which is part of the Treasury Department, for helping to finance terrorism, including Al-Qaeda and Hamas. One of the institutions that was linked to the individuals and the institutions busted in the March 20th, 2002 raids was the Bank Al-Taqwa, founded by apparent Nazi intelligence officer, Abwehr officer, Yosef Nava, and basically midwived. The godfather of which, I should probably say, was François Genoux, the heir to the political last will and testament of and collected literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. The fellow who managed the account for Al-Qaeda in the Bank Al-Taqwa was a guy named Ali bin Musaleem. He was found dead in his Geneva, Switzerland apartment about a month after that became public. Turned out he was under indictment in the U.S. for working to corner the silver market. That puts him in connection with Nelson Bunker Hunt of the ultra-right wing Hunt oil family. And again, in not only our last program, but 1006, I spoke about the subversion of Operation Green Quest and Talat Otman and Grover Norquist's Islamic Free Market Institute. And in our discussion of 1025 and 1026, we reviewed some of the corporatist or free market or laissez-faire economics of Ibn Khaldun and the Muslim Brotherhood. Ronald Reagan cited Ibn Khaldun, and the Muslim Brotherhood is much beloved of the transnational corporate community for exactly their economic policy. More about Saint Khashoggi here. This from the Wall Street Journal of October 12th of 2018 by Margarita Stancati, capital S-T-A-N-C-A-T-I, and Nancy A. Youssef, Y-O-U-S-S-E-F, missing journalist, was an insider willing to cross Saudi red lines. He was an insider, all right, skipping down. While he had become known as a dissident writer in recent years, he was a long-time insider who remained close to some of Saudi Arabia's most powerful princes. One of the country's best-known journalists, he clashed with the clerical establishment for his socially liberal views. His sympathy for democratic movements, read the Muslim Brotherhood, drew the ire of the Saudi government, particularly for the Muslim Brotherhood, which the royal family views as a threat to its absolute monarchy. Skipping down. The journalist, who was 59 when he disappeared, had believed he was safe in Istanbul. He trusted Turkey even more than the U.S., said a Saudi friend of Mr. Khashoggi. Mr. Khashoggi was close to the government of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, whose ties with Saudi Arabia had become increasingly strained in recent years. Turkey backed Qatar in its diplomatic spat with Saudi Arabia last year, and like Qatar, Turkey also differs with Saudi Arabia over its view of the Muslim Brotherhood. Qatar, by the way, is the home of Al Jazeera, which is run lock, stock, and barrel by the Muslim Brotherhood. It is a chevron of the moral and philosophical bankruptcy, not to mention the complete abject historical and political ignorance of the so-called progressive sector in this country, that not only is Al Jazeera lionized, but they had favorable views of the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, they're going to bring democracy to the Middle East. I couldn't say she is the dumbest person in the so-called progressive sector, but she certainly is tied for worst. A gal named Cindy Sheehan, who became something of a public icon after the invasion of Iraq in the first decade of this century, made a trip to Egypt and was talking about how Egypt had to have democracy, and democracy in Egypt had to come through the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, one of the things that the Muslim Brotherhood, again, an Islamic fascist organization that was allied with the Axis in World War II and jumped to the CIA and other Western intel agencies after the war. By the way, in the book, Undercover by John Roy Carlson, one of the anti-fascist books that is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website, there is an interview with Hassan al-Banna, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood. I remember Cindy Sheehan saying about, traveling to Egypt. I wonder who paid for her trip, by the way. Talking all about how wonderful the Muslim Brotherhood was and about how we had to support them because they were the voice of democracy in Egypt. When the Muslim Brotherhood achieved a significant electoral presence in the Egyptian parliament in the early part of this, the first decade of this century, one of the first things that they did was to propose, I think it passed, I'm not sure if it was defeated, they proposed a bill to ban sanitary napkin dispensers in the women's restrooms at public high schools because under Orthodox Islam, women are considered unclean when they are menstruating and men are not supposed to have any contact with them. So obviously, if you ban sanitary napkin dispensers in women's restrooms at public high schools, you are going to make it difficult, if not impossible, for women to attend high school, and therefore the young men will not have any association with them. I guess that is what Cindy Sheehan meant by democracy. When the Muslim Brotherhood briefly achieved power for a little over a year, not quite 2 years following the so-called Arab Spring, one of the things that they did was to set up mobile units to, quote, purify, unquote, Egyptian women. Genital mutilation, basically the surgical removing, basically clitorectomies were banned, that something like 90% of married women in Egypt over the age of 45 had been, quote, purified, unquote. In other words, they had had a clitorectomy. It is not female circumcision. The idea is to sexually mutilate women so they cannot, if they cannot have orgasm or make it very difficult to have an orgasm. That was banned by law by Egypt, finally, after many years. One of the very first things that the Muslim Brotherhood did after Morsi came to power was to set up mobile groups to, quote, purify, unquote, women who desired to basically be subjected to a clitorectomy. You know, one wonders what Cindy Sheehan would think about that and if she would be willing to subject herself to that particular form of, quote, democratic, unquote, manifestation. Erdogan, again, very, very close to Khashoggi, has one foot in Muslim Brotherhood Islamic fascism and the other in secular pan-Turkish National Action Party and Grey Wolf type fascism. He is a fascist with a capital F, and the fact that the late Jamal Khashoggi was close to him is just another damning element. More about Khashoggi from that Wall Street Journal article. He traveled to Afghanistan as a journalist, where he became the first Arab journalist to interview Osama bin Laden in the late 1980s. A lot of them went to fight. He went to report, unquote, said Peter Bergen, an American journalist and academic who knew Mr. Khashoggi. One wonders if he was a CIA or a Western intelligence journalist. That is a very common manifestation. Certainly, he was an advocate of the Afghan Mujahideen, might very well have been working for and perhaps for CIA in that capacity, and perhaps after that as well. He might have been working for Turkish intelligence as well, or instead of, because he was very close to Prince Turki Al-Faisal. Skipping down. Through it all, he, Jamal Khashoggi, maintained close ties to some of Saudi Arabia's most powerful princes. In the early 2000s, he served as an advisor to Prince Turki Al-Faisal, a former head of Saudi intelligence, during the prince's time as ambassador to the UK and the US. He was a friend of the billionaire Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal. Again, more connections than a switchboard. Turki Al-Faisal was the Saudi intelligence chief who ran Osama bin Laden, not just during the Afghan Mujahideen War against the Soviets, but right up almost and just, I believe it was either just before or just after the September 11th attacks. And Jamal Khashoggi was close to him, probably working as a spook journalist, either for the Saudis and or for CIA. He was a friend of Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal. Prince Al-Waleed was one of the people after the so-called 20th hijacker released a list of or testified about a list of prominent Saudis who were financing al-Qaeda. It included Prince bin Al-Waleed bin Talal, who then promptly announced he was going to take all of his business holdings, billions of dollars in business holdings, and turn them over to charity. Prince Al-Waleed was the second largest stockholder in Fox News, in the Fox Corporation behind the Murdoch family, and he also was a major investor in Apple as well. He was, again, a prophylactic of the First Order. Skipping down, more about the friends of the late Jamal Khashoggi. Fearing he would be arrested or banned from leaving, he left Saudi Arabia. In the U.S., he became a contributor to the opinion pages of the Washington Post, which, along with his nearly 2 million Twitter followers, gave his praise and criticism of the Saudi royal family enormous weight. In his penultimate column, Mr. Khashoggi said democracy in the Middle East couldn't happen without the inclusion of the Muslim Brotherhood. Quote, "The eradication of the Muslim Brotherhood is nothing less than an abolition of democracy and a guarantee that Arabs will continue living under authoritarian and corrupt regimes," unquote, Mr. Khashoggi wrote August 28th. Again, quoting, "There can be no political reform and democracy as an Arab country without accepting that political Islam is a part of it." He maintained cordial relations with some Saudi officials. Well, some Saudis helped to finance the Muslim Brotherhood and al-Qaeda, basically to keep their swords, that is, al-Qaeda's swords and Muslim Brotherhood's swords off of their necks. And again, there is kind of a dual policy. They also use them, as does CIA and other Western intel agencies, as proxy warriors. They were useful against the Soviets, useful against the former Yugoslavia, and they are being used against the Russians in the Caucasus. Coming down, skipping down in that article. His departure had come around the time when Saudi Arabia and its closest allies broke diplomatic ties with neighboring Qatar, citing Doha's support for the Muslim Brotherhood among the reasons. Much to the frustration of the Saudi government, Mr. Khashoggi continued to write favorably about the group. U.S. officials have pointed to Mr. Khashoggi's views on the Brotherhood as one issue that likely irritated Saudi royalty, and by the same token, endeared him to the U.S. and to the transnational corporate community. That is my addition. Skipping down again. Mr. Khashoggi's first claim to fame was his acquaintance with Osama bin Laden. Mr. Khashoggi had spent time in Jeddah, bin Laden's hometown, and like bin Laden, he came from a prominent non-royal family. Mr. Khashoggi's grandfather was a doctor who had treated Saudi Arabia's first king. His uncle was Adnan Khashoggi, a famous arms dealer, although Jamal Khashoggi did not benefit from his uncle's wealth. Adnan Khashoggi got his start in business by doing a $25 million truck deal with Mohammed bin Laden, Osama's father. And again, Adnan Khashoggi, more connections than a switchboard. His CV reads, a partial CV, the Iran-Contra affair, the overlapping DCCI affair. His name was on the chain letter of financiers of al-Qaeda. He also had many links to elements winding through the investigative tangle having to do with September 11th. And Adnan Khashoggi was also one of the financiers of the most inappropriately named, quote, truther, unquote, movement, which, by the way, not incidentally, exonerates the Saudis from any involvement in September 11th, although there was a whole lot more to it than the Saudis. They were involved. Skipping down. Like many Saudis in the 1980s, Mr. Khashoggi cheered for the jihad against the Soviets in Afghanistan, which was supported by the CIA and Saudi Arabia. So when he got an invitation to see it for himself from another young Saudi, bin Laden, Mr. Khashoggi jumped at the chance. Skipping down again. He was there as a journalist, first and foremost, admittedly as someone sympathetic to the Afghan jihad, but so were most Arab journalists at the time, and many Western journalists as well, said Thomas Heghammer, a Norwegian researcher who interviewed Mr. Khashoggi about his time in Afghanistan. Skipping down. Mr. Khashoggi's trip to Afghanistan and his relationship with Prince Turki al-Faisal, who headed Saudi intelligence, by the way, and was running Osama bin Laden, right up, or almost perhaps even beyond, or right up to the September 11th attacks, made some of Mr. Khashoggi's friends suspect he was also spying for the Saudi government. And now I suspect for CIA, but that's just me. Years later, after American commandos killed bin Laden in Pakistan in 2011, Mr. Khashoggi mourned his old acquaintance and what he had become. I quote, I collapsed crying a while ago, heartbroken for you, Abu Abdullah, Mr. Khashoggi wrote on Twitter, using bin Laden's nickname. You were beautiful and brave in those beautiful days in Afghanistan before you surrendered to hatred and passion. Prince Turki was very close to Prince al-Faisal. Turki al-Faisal was running Osama bin Laden right up to the September 11th attacks. I've forgotten whether he resigned just before or just after the September 11th attacks, but these tears are crocodile tears at best. So we could go on and on, but basically, Jamal Khashoggi was probably a spook journalist, was working on behalf of the Muslim Brotherhood. He was tight with Khaled Safouri, the co-founder of Grover Norquist and Karl Rove's Islamic Free Market Institute, and it was the managing director of that, Talat Otman, a former director of George W. Bush's Harkin Energy, who interceded with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill 2 weeks after the March 20th, or just over 2 weeks after the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids. And then-Treasury Secretary O'Neill was obliged to resign some months after that. The FBI was also involved, and the FBI's involvement was obfuscated by then-head of the FBI, Robert Mueller, that most special prosecutor who is now heading up the, quote, investigation of the, quote, Russiagate, unquote, scandal. A lot of quotes there. It's going to be really interesting to see how the Democrats and the liberals, when they find out basically there's been nothing there in this Russiagate thing, and I suspect for all the press we have, they're not going to come up with a whole lot. And the right will trumpet, right for once in their lives, that this was a political investigation. It's also meant to fire up the liberals and the Democrats for war or something like that with Russia. But Jamal Khashoggi, an advocate of the Muslim Brotherhood, of the corporatist, laissez-faire economics of people like Khairat al-Shater, Ibn Khaldun, Ronald Reagan, Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, et al. And again, working on behalf of an Islamic fascist organization. I think basically what they're looking to do is to supplant corporate Arab or Islamic corporatism. They're looking to replace, I should say, Islamic petro-feudalism in the Gulf monarchies with Islamic corporatist Muslim Brotherhood economics and political presence. I think that perhaps the transnational corporation are worried that these monarchies might ultimately spawn real democracy, economic as well as political. So I think the Brotherhood is meant to go in there and take care of that. There's much, much more I could say, but time's wasting. Suffice it to say, I could not believe all the beating of breasts and tearing of hair over Jamal Khashoggi. What? Who was this guy? Why are they breaking ranks all of a sudden? The Saudis killed one person. They've killed so goddamn many people. Osama bin Laden, according to the report, killed a few, huh? Why all this brouhaha? Well, that's why. In connection with the hashtag MeTooOp, and I believe that, and the Women's March founded by a woman named Bob Bland, who is the CEO of an apparel company which, some months after her founding of the Women's Marches, was awarded a lucrative multi-million-dollar Pentagon contract. That actually is her name, Johnny Cash, wrote and sang a song about the boy named Sue. She's the girl named Bob. And I believe, overlapping psyops, very sophisticated in nature. And again, sometime I would like to do maybe 2 hours about some of the psychological warfare aspects of manipulated sexuality. But to do that, I'd have to get into at least 1 hour of discussion of social psychology, Freudian psychology, and I don't think I'm going to be able to take the time. But one of the victims of that was John Conyers, who had his removal via the hashtag MeToo, signaled by Mike Cernovich, an ultra-right-wing blogger, who famously tweeted, quote, "Misogyny gets you laid," unquote. One of the indications of the right-wing foundation of much of the hashtag MeToo op. John Conyers, in addition to being one of the few congressional critics willing to identify the OUNB successor Nazis in Ukraine for being exactly what they are, was also very critical of Narendra Modi and his Hindutva fascism and glorification of Hitler in textbooks, Indian school textbooks, when Modi was head of Gujarat. I noted in For the Record 1021 that Pierre Omidyar had been very active in helping to promote Modi and also very active in helping to promote the OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine, sort of a flanking movement on both Russia and China and the Earth Island. And I think we can look at the removal of John Conyers, signaled, by the way, by, again, good old Mike Cernovich. That's Mike, "Misogyny gets you laid," unquote, Cernovich. From foreign policy, by the way, in a past program, I misidentified foreign policy as the publication of the CFR. That is foreign affairs. That is the quarterly of the CFR. Foreign policy is put out by the Washington Post Group. Foreign policy of November 19th of 2013 by John Hudson, Hudson. Top Republican denies association with banned Hindu supremacists. The State Department decision precipitated a resolution. This is skipping down. The State Department decision precipitated a resolution by the House of Representatives to condemn a range of Modi's actions, including promoting Nazi ideology. The sponsor, Representative John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, said the State Department, quote, "has discussed the role of Modi and his government in promoting attitudes of racial supremacy, racial hatred, and the legacy of Nazism through his government's support of school textbooks in which Nazism is glorified, unquote. The resolution said Moby revised school textbooks which mentioned the, quote, charismatic personality of Hitler the Supremo, unquote, and failed to acknowledge the horrors of the Holocaust. For roughly 20 years, John Conyers had none other than Rosa Parks as his secretary, his administrative assistant, and before achieving iconic status in the civil rights movement for the Montgomery bus boycott, Rosa Parks had been very active on behalf of African-American men and women who had been sexually abused by white people. And John Conyers, a victim of the, quote, hashtag Me Too, unquote, I believe, PSYOP. And one of the few people willing to stand up and call the fascists and Nazis in Ukraine what they actually were, and also to label Narendra Modi the Hindu for fascist and Hitler sympathizer that he clearly is. One of the things we have spoken about in connection with Ukraine is that the militia of the Svoboda Group, one of the OUNB Nazi-slash-fascist successor organizations that wields power in the national security establishment of Ukraine, their militia is called C-14 or Combat 14, and they, along with the National Druzhina Militia of the Azov Battalion, have assumed police duties in the capital, Kiev, and something like 31 other Ukrainian cities. Combat 14, or C-14, is named for the 14 words of David Lane. David Lane was a member of the Order who drove the getaway car for the murder of Alan Berg and has now become an icon for the international fascist movement. The Forward magazine of June 28th of 2018 had an article by Avia Kushner, K-U-S-H-N-E-R, noting the following interesting item. I don't think this is a coincidence at all. Our, quote, 14, unquote, and 88, unquote, Nazi dog whistles in border security document or just numbers. Sometimes a dog whistle can be a number, not a word. The number 88 appeared in a strange context in a press release from Homeland Security calling for building a border wall, along with a headline that had a total of 14 words, but until today, no one seems to have noticed. Today, the press release, originally issued in February, is getting some attention from journalists covering the hate and extremism beat. Here is an example from Christopher Mathias, M-A-T-H-I-A-S, who covers hate and extremism for the Huffington Post. What is happening for those needing a translation is this. The number 88 is code word for Heil Hitler, and 14 is white supremacist shorthand. Quote, one of the most common white supremacist symbols, 88, is used throughout the entire white supremacist movement, not just neo-Nazis. One can find it as a tattoo or graphic symbol, as part of the name of a group, publication, or website, or as part of a screen name or email address, the ABL's hate symbol database notes. Most of the press release titled, quote, we must secure the border and build the wall to make America safe again, uses percentages, as do many statistical reports. Skipping down. It may just be coincidence. It says, on average, out of 88 claims that pass the credible fear screening, fewer than 13 will ultimately result in a grant of asylum. That's odd. Normally, a report might say something like less than 15% ultimately result in a grant of asylum. It may just be coincidence, and on a day when journalists are shot, everyone with a connection to media is understandably on edge. But there is one other factor to consider, say those who hear a dog whistle. What if this 88 is read in conjunction with the headline, which has 14 words? The 14-word thing is its own signal. As the ABL hate symbol database explains in its unpacking of 88, quote, the number is frequently combined with another white supremacist numeric code, 14, shorthand for the so-called 14 words slogan. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children, unquote. That is a quote from David Lane, who drove the getaway car in the murder of Alan Byrd for the group The Order, whose inspiration was Turner Diaries, and who received financing, quote, from old German families, unquote, in South America. Guess who that might be? I suspect that the 14 words, which was explicitly the inspiration for C-14 or Combat 14, the militia of the Nazi Svoboda organization in Ukraine. I think that the 14 words, again, we must secure the existence for our people and a future for white children, and we must secure the border and build the wall to make America safe again. I don't think that is a coincidence at all. And using 88, I don't think is a coincidence either. These guys are smart. I think, frankly, although I don't agree with their views, obviously, they're a lot smarter than most of the so-called progressives. They sure as hell a lot smarter than Sidney Clitorectomy is Democracy She and some of the limpheads who prevail in the so-called progressive sector. I don't think this is a coincidence at all. I think they are basically signaling their constituency. Two articles that I'm going to go into at greater length, or perhaps review in our next program, looking at people who have made it into the Homeland Security Department and have much to do with Trump's policy towards immigrants. I don't think this is a coincidence at all. Again, that was on a DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, website.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
From the Atlantic Magazine of August 28th of this year, 2018, an article by Rosie R-O-S-I-E Gray, G-R-A-Y, emails link former Homeland Security official to white nationalists, unquote. In the past 2 years, leaders of an emboldened white nationalism have burst into the forefront of national politics and coalesced around so-called alt-right subculture as they have endeavored to make their ideology part of the mainstream. Recent developments have shed light on previously unknown connections between white nationalist activists and the Trump administration. Now, the Department of Homeland Security has denounced, quote, all forms of violent extremism, unquote, following the resignation of a policy analyst who had connections with white nationalists, according to leaked emails obtained by The Atlantic. And we're going to talk more about this and more about the article that will follow, go into it at greater length. One of the organizations that has helped to propel some of these people into positions in the Trump administration having to do with immigration and the Department of Homeland Security is something for an organization called the Federation for American Immigration Reform. In For the Record 1013, we talked about American eugenics policy and how it links to the politics of immigration and fascism. The Federation for American Immigration Reform receives financing from the Pioneer Fund. That is a pro-eugenics organization which, like many mainstream eugenics organizations, and eugenics was mainstream in the U.S. and elsewhere in the West prior to World War II. It supported the eugenics legislation and actions of Adolf Hitler. I've spoken about that in many programs, including For the Record Program 908, Miscellaneous Archive Show N12, and others. The Pioneer Fund received financing from Wycliffe Draper. He was a blood relative of William Draper, who, as a member of Dillon Reed, helped to channel much American investment into pre-Nazi and Nazi Germany. Then, as Brigadier William Draper, as we talked about in For the Record Program 511, and also the Miscellaneous Archive Show Uncle Sam and the Swastika, he helped to cover up the American-German corporate connections. The point being that not only the racist, and in particular the pro-corporatist, anti-labor, and anti-communist stance of fascism, including, by the way, the Muslim Brotherhood, that endeared it to powerful interests in the West. So, too, the eugenics legislation and actions of Nazi Germany, which drew heavily on eugenics legislation and activism in the U.S., among other Western nations, it, too, had favor in powerful circles. The Draper family, with Wycliffe Draper, the financier of the Pioneer Fund, one of the backers of the Federation of Immigration Reform, and in the 30s, a backer of Nazi eugenics legislation as well. And William Draper, who helped channel American investment money, Wall Street investment money, to Nazi Germany or pre-Nazi Germany and then Nazi Germany, they exemplify that connection. Also from CNN of April 12th of 2017, hardline anti-immigration advocates hired at two federal agencies, this by Maria Santana. And it talks about some of the same types of personalities making it into positions of power. Two hardline opponents of illegal immigration have obtained high-level advisory jobs at federal immigration agencies in the Department of Homeland Security. John Fear, a former legal policy analyst for the Center for Immigration Studies, or CIS, has been hired as an advisor to Thomas D. Homan, H-O-M-A-N, the acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, according to Homeland Security spokesman David Lappin. And we'll go into this more in our next program. Again, these individuals have received backing from the Federation for American Immigration Reform, which in turn has received financing from the Pioneer Fund, which was supportive of German and Nazi eugenics legislation and action as well. And as we looked at in For the Record 664 and Miscellaneous Archive Show M12, among other shows, the Nazi eugenics legislation and action drew heavily on its American counterparts. Again, we'll go more into this more in our next program. I suspect the 14 words and the use of 88 were indeed Nazi dog whistles, and that has antecedents in some of the personnel who have moved up. The Sweden Democrats did very well, although not as well as some had predicted, in the recent elections in Sweden. An op-ed column in the New York Times of September 6th of 2018 by Jochen Bittner, How the Far Right Conquered Sweden, goes into some of this. What it does not mention, however, is that one of the principal financiers of the Sweden Democrats, a fascist party originally Nazi slash Odinist in orientation, was Carl Lundstrom, an associate of the same milieu as David Duke, to which David Duke belongs. He is also the chief financier of the Pirate Bay website on which WikiLeaks held forth for quite some time. You won't read that in the New York Times, and you won't hear about that from the so-called progressive sector as well. In connection with immigration, an interesting, albeit obviously speculative element happened the same day that Trump's attorney pleaded guilty and that Paul Manafort was found guilty of various things. And I've gone into Manafort's almost certain role as a spook working to and successfully working to maneuver Ukraine from the Russian orbit into the West. A case broke in Iowa, or rather was, quote, solved, unquote, in Iowa, which served to eclipse that and which gave not only Donald Trump but other Republicans some talking points with which to eclipse the guilty plea and the convictions of Manafort. From the Daily Mail of the UK of August 21st of 2018, prominent Iowa Republican family which owns farm where Molly Tibbetts' alleged killer worked say he passed government's migrant check as the 24-year-old is charged with her murder after admitting to, quote, chasing her down while jogging. Moving quickly, the prominent Republican family which owns the farm where Molly Tibbetts' alleged killer worked have insisted that he passed background checks for immigrant workers. Christian Rivera, who is from Mexico, was charged with the first-degree murder on Tuesday after leading police to a cornfield where Molly's body was dumped. Dana Lang, co-owner of Yerby Farms, along with Eric Lang, confirmed that Rivera had worked there for 4 years and was an employee of good standing. Skipping down. This is Molly Tibbetts, a very pretty, almost iconically all-American farm girl at the University of Iowa, who went missing and then was found murdered. Skipping down. Investigators say Rivera followed Molly in his dark Chevy Malibu as she went for a run around 7:30 p.m. on July 18th. He, quote, blacked out, unquote, and attacked her after she threatened to call the police unless he left her alone, officers said. Rivera was identified by surveillance footage obtained in the last couple of weeks from someone's home. It showed him following the student in his car and Molly running ahead of him. It is not yet clear how Molly died. Skipping down. Rivera told police that after seeing her, he pulled over and parked his car to get out and run with her. Molly grabbed her phone and threatened to call the police before running off ahead. The suspect said that made him, quote, panic, unquote, and he chased after her. That is when he, quote, blacked out, unquote. He claims he remembers nothing from then until he was back in his car driving. He then noticed one of her earphones sitting on his lap and blood in the car, then remembered he'd stuffed her in the trunk, skipping down. Donald Trump at a Charleston, West Virginia rally. By the way, that is the home of National Vanguard Books, the publishing arm of the National Alliance. They put out Serpent's Walk and the Turner Diaries. You heard today with the illegal alien coming in very sadly from Mexico, Trump said, and you saw what happened to that incredible, beautiful young woman. Should have never happened illegally in our country. We've had a huge impact, but the laws are so bad. The immigration laws are such a disgrace. We are getting them changed, but we have to get more Republicans. Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa complained that the broken immigration system that allowed a predator complained about the broken, unquote, immigration system that allowed a predator to live in her state, skipping down. Molly was staying overnight in her boyfriend's home the night she went missing and was last seen going for a jog in the neighborhood at around 8 p.m., but what happened afterwards remained a complete mystery for weeks. Her boyfriend opened a Snapchat photograph from her at 10 p.m., which appeared to suggest that she was indoors, but it is not known at what time Molly sent it, skipping down. The police said, and this is quoting them, Rivera admitted to making contact with a female running in Brooklyn and that he pursued her in his vehicle in an area east of Brooklyn. Defendant Rivera stated he parked the vehicle, got out, and was running behind her and alongside of her. Rivera stated that, quote, she grabbed her phone and said, I'm going to call the police, unquote. Rivera said he then panicked and got mad that he, quote, blocked, unquote, his memory, which is what he does when he gets very upset and doesn't remember anything after that until he came to at an intersection. Well, it remembers, what this reminds me of is Saram. Saram. We'll continue this at greater length in our next program. Suffice it to say that as we look at 1,000, for the record 1,002, not only were Aryan Nations and Order members working on mind control, but mind control is something that our intelligence services have used for a long time, and that elements of which have used in pro-Republican politics, such as the assassination of Robert Kennedy, talked about in AFA number 9 and other programs. We'll go into this at greater length in our next program. However, this concludes For the Record program number 1028, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, being recorded on October 16th of 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.